Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from August 8th, 2017. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Arahant Sutta. In this concise teaching, the Buddha teaches that penetrative understanding of five clinging aggregates brings awakening. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So tonight's talk is on the Arahant Sutta, where the Buddha describes awakening in a single paragraph. And it's notable just for that, but also the topic or the subject that he addresses is the five clinging aggregates. So like most suttas, taken out of context, reading this, listening to someone talk about it is almost useless. You need to have an understanding of the context of what the Buddha is teaching and some of these terms like five clinging aggregates. The five clinging aggregates describe the personal ongoing experience of dukkha. The Buddha describes dukkha as birth is dukkha or stressful, sickness is stressful, aging is stressful, death is stressful, not getting what is desired is stressful, getting what is undesired is stressful. And sometimes there's a little bit more elaboration along those lines. But the Buddha always concludes that description of dukkha, a description of the First Noble Truth, as the five clinging aggregates are dukkha. So understanding that process is paramount to understanding what the Buddha is teaching. Now remember, this sutta is given to a group of experienced Dhamma practitioners too. The Buddha just didn't happen to blurt it out in a busy restaurant and expect people to understand it. In this sutta, the Buddha describes awakening or full human maturity, and it is remarkable in its simplicity and straightforwardness, the Buddha's words. And when one has seen the five clinging aggregates as they really are, the arising and the passing away, understanding the attraction and the distraction, seeing the arising of desire and the continued delusion, and being delivered from the five clinging aggregates, this one is released from clinging. All defilements are destroyed. What must be done has been done. Perfection is attained. The burden, it's a great line, the burden has been put down, the highest goal attained. This one is liberated by perfect insight. That's the Arahant Sutta. Every line has something that is significant and important in there. But remember, how many people understand that simple sutta? Okay, you all can leave. There's some key lines. One of the most key lines is the noticing the arising and the passing away, and that points to the impermanence. It points to the three marks of existence and the impermanence of self-referential views, doesn't it? So the five clinging aggregates describe this thing that I use to say, well, this is me. By clinging these aggregates together, I'm fooling myself to think that this is a permanent me. Understanding the arising and the passing away of these five aggregates allows me to develop a dispassionate view of myself in relation to the world. I'm no longer holding on to me. This is me. I have to defend me. I have to promote me in all things. When I recognize that this thing, the five clinging aggregates, is always in a constant process of becoming, it lightens the burden and it points my mind towards, what do I want to become in this moment? Do I want to become a person prone to confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing disappointment? Or do I want to become a person who's awakened or has gained full human maturity? It's the whole point of the Buddha's teaching. There's nothing magical or mystical or esoteric about it. It points directly to understanding the process that we put ourselves in and insist is the only way to look at the world, my views. No matter how difficult those views, no matter how much difficulty results from holding on to those views. Frank, you had a question.
More like a statement than a question. In my experience this summer with being on vacation, being in a close environment with family members, strangers, you know, close on beaches, whatever, so I can definitely identify my own arising and passing away of feelings, thoughts, emotions, and I can identify when I'm in ignorance of that first noble truth, and recognizing and acknowledging that this is what's taking place, feel the release of that that burden. But I've been now experiencing other people's clinging and grasping, and annoying, like how that makes annoyance arise in me, like almost intolerance to other people. Almost like you can't get away from it. So I could feel this arising, and then it's almost like a dual thing. Like I have my own desires and cravings and whatever, and wants, and getting what I don't want, and getting more of what I don't want and not what I want. Right? For instance, like being with my kids, like wanting them to do something, and then getting what I don't want them to do. For example, and being in a house and being on vacation, and my wife and I wanting something entirely different, and then also being in the experience of them, what they want and what they're chasing and what they're grasping after, and then I start to feel my arising of anger and annoyance, and then I'm like, and I'm meditating more, and my daughter actually posted something funny on my Facebook page. It was a meme of a guy sitting next to his bed saying, "This is me trying to transform my anger and annoyance of human beings into positive energy." I thought it was funny. There's a lot of truth to it.
There is.
And, yeah. I don't know if that made any sense.
It made a lot of sense.
Anyone who makes children understand exactly what you said.
That's great. The five clinging aggregates are form, physical form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and ongoing consciousness. Remember, dependent origination, it's consciousness rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Those are the five aggregates. Perceptions and mental fabrications are what causes us to become annoyed with other people, even when we're mindful of the Eightfold Path, and to just use a phrase, and we know better, because we recognize the futility of what other people are grasping at and clinging to. But initially, that understanding can bring some aggravation to ourselves because we know the futility of it.
And but I'm also aware of the impermanence of it and how it's not that fleet. It's like lasting way too long.
Where the hell's the impermanence in this?
Like the impermanence is a 3-week impermanence. So I can't put them on a boat or ship them back to school.
So I think you've heard me say this, Frank. Continuity obscures impermanence, but it's still impermanent. Yeah, and sometimes things just aren't passing away fast
enough. That's where you have to interject tolerance and patience.
Yeah. Well, and it comes from it comes from an overall development of concentration rooted in meditation, and mindfulness, holding in mind the factors of the Eightfold Path. So, and that's all of it. I mean, we need all of it in those situations where we're becoming frustrated, don't we? We need right view. We need right intention. We need to be mindful of right speech and action so we don't act inappropriately.
Exactly.
And we need a practice that we have developed as a true refuge. So in those situations where life is just getting to be too much, we know that we have a refuge. And it's within the Dhamma. It's within our own meditation practice. And that we can access that at any time. Bonnie, you had a...
I was just going to say, so, you know, the part of that you can feel the thing arising in you. And at any point, you know that you can, the more you're conscious of, this isn't me, this isn't, you know, who I am, to pull, you know, your ego away from that. It's like it's almost... You know that you have the choice to do that, but at what point do you feel like there's, in fact, going to be a gain by doing it, but it feels almost like you're giving up some part of that, I mean, you know, it's letting go of the conditioned way of responding so that it can fall away and you can allow it to be what it is or what other people are expecting of you, or that because... You know, so when we're not all on the same mindset, that, you know, makes it harder.
And that when it feels hard, when it feels difficult, that's clinging. That's the direct experience of clinging to a view. And we have to be careful not to get too analytical about it. Just recognize. Clinging is the five clinging aggregates. We don't even have to fit it into one of those five aggregates. We don't have to say, well, this is a perception that's causing me. We recognize clinging. And we recognize that we're clinging to the vehicle that's prone to confusion, delusion, and suffering. Within that vehicle, we can't expect to
right.
recognize
it's a choice,
it.
Though, to let it go. Like,
yes.
To know that you're clinging.
Well,
and to practice restraint at that point. And that's in a broad sense, a feeling is a disturbance in the mind. And when we recognize the disturbance, could be anything, it's at that point that we practice restraint, meaning, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. It's a clinging view that's causing the disturbance, Frank.
I was just recognizing that it's like when it starts to feel really personal, I recognize it and then realize that it's very impersonal and that it's just the vehicle of that experience that makes it personal. And it's helpful.
Yes.
It helps me let go of it so much quicker when I practice a principle in there, you know, just being generous of heart or whatever.
Yeah.
Not material things, but more like taking an action.
Yeah.
You know, compassion or empathy or just actually finding something to be grateful for, you know.
Yeah, being generous with your mindful presence. It's the most important thing we can be generous with. And you mentioned noticing, the Buddha talks about in the sutta, noticing the arising and the passing away of these aggregates. The arising and the passing away of what I'm clinging to or what I'm not clinging to. And notice that all things are impermanent. And also, when you look at it that way, noticing the arising and the passing away of all things describes a mind of equanimity, doesn't it? A mind that's always at calm. Because it simply recognizes the ongoing process of all things, including this thing called the self, including the ongoing process of becoming either awakened or becoming more confused and deluded. It's all part of the process. There's another line here I wanted to pick out. The last line, this one is liberated by perfect insight. Remember, in the context, the Buddha starts out by saying, when you can recognize the process of the arising and passing away of the five clinging aggregates, he concludes by saying this one is liberated by perfect insight. He's pointing to the importance of gaining insight into the three marks of existence. So we're not... The reason why I'm bringing that up is it helps us focus our Dhamma practice. We don't get lost into analyzing concepts. We don't even get lost into analyzing why I feel a certain way. The Buddha says we feel a certain way. We feel agitated because we're stuck in a wrong view. Recognize the arising and the passing away of all things, including the views that we have. And you hear me say this often. Lao Tzu, who said this beautifully, he says, when you recognize the impermanence of all things, including, and most importantly, self-referential views, you'll let go of everything. Why hold on to anything that's impermanent? The Buddha uses the words, it's like foam on the ocean, these views that we have of ourselves. Remember when the Buddha describes his first view of the world post his awakening in the Nagara Sutta. He describes it as the world is a flame. Now, of course, that's a metaphor. He's not looking at a burning globe. He's looking at the passions that have arisen in the people around him. And they're inflamed with this passion. They're inflamed with the passion that arises from ignorance of Four Noble Truths. They're inflamed with the passion of maintaining that which can't be maintained, five clinging aggregates. It was that initial view out onto the world, his understanding of what was occurring, that led to his development of the Eightfold Path. How do we get past that incredibly powerful need to maintain that type of passion? We need to develop dispassion. And how do we do that? We recognize the impermanence of all things. And this doesn't mean, I get this question often, sometimes here, but often online, because I don't have the direct interaction with some of the students. Well, what happened? Do I become an automaton when I let go of that? No. You simply stop reacting from a point of view that's rooted in ignorance. But you are much more mindfully present with your life as your life occurs when you've shed the five clinging aggregates. An entire moment-by-moment life is then meaningful, rather than only those things that seem to grab our attentions, those things that we have desire for more of or that we have an aversion to. Those are the things that an unawakened, somewhat immature person would describe their life by, the things that they're getting and the things that they're avoiding. Isn't that true? An awakened human being, or one developing the Eightfold Path, sees all of those things on an equal footing because they're all impermanent and they're all part of the process of becoming. So with a wrong view, a view rooted in ignorance, that process of chasing after what makes me happy, what makes me feel good, and being mindfully agitated to avoid the things that I don't want to happen, I'm missing what happens in between, don't I? I'm missing my entire life. As we let go of the need for things to be any different than they are, then we can stay mindfully present for our life as our life occurs. We've shed the five clinging aggregates. We still are a form. We still are living in a body. We still have feelings. We still have perceptions, and we have... I got to be careful with this. We still have fabrications, but those fabrications, those is another word for fabrications, is assumptions. But those assumptions are no longer rooted in ignorance. They're rooted and framed by a right view of the world. And so the fifth aggregate of consciousness is free of the influence of wrong views creating agitated feelings, wrong perceptions and wrong assumptions, wrong fabrications. It's simply present with life as life occurs. And that's the point of this brief sutta, but it's also the point of the entire Buddhist Dhamma. It's not an escape from the world. There's nothing magical about it or mystical. It's simply the most practical teaching on how to live in the world and be at peace with whatever occurs. And isn't that an incredible thing, to be at peace with whatever occurs in our life? So that's the end of tonight's talk. Any questions about this? All right, let's go around the room. See how your practice is going. Good to see you, Ram.
Practice is good. Today, meditation was sleepy, both in the morning and today. And that is just how it is sometimes.
It's just how it is, yeah.
Enjoying it.
I'm glad you are. Good to see you tonight. Andrew, good to see you. How are you?
I have to admit my practice is erratic, and that's why coming here is, again, is a good thing, because I'm able to meditate, I'm able to think better here than I'm on my own.
Yeah.
So, just continue.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. And most people would say the same thing, that you know, that's the idea of a Sangha, is to support our practice. So can't do it alone. Helen, good to see you.
Thank you, John. Good to be here. I would agree with Andrew that my best meditation happens here in Sangha. So it means a lot to me. What we were talking about tonight, I traveled with my mother to visit some aunts over the weekend, and my mom is right up there with the worst passenger, driver, backseat, in control. Why are you going this way? I mean, she's like right up there. And so I've got the GPS on for backup, and you know, she would talk as the GPS is trying to tell us to take turns, and then she would be like, oh, I should just stop talking. I'm like, no, Mom, it's okay. And so on the way home, she was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know if I'm a jinx. Whenever I drive with anybody, we get lost. I'm like, yeah, okay, Mom. Well, why don't we just accept that we're going to get lost? And then we'll get lost, and then we'll get unlost. How's that? And she's like, well, that sounds like a good way to look at it. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to get lost and get unlost. And
yeah.
That's the way it's going to be.
It is, and you can be mindfully present throughout all of it without getting aggravated.
You're like, hey, Mom, we did it. We're lost again. So, yeah, so I think, you know, we crossed a bridge there. She was really stressing out and feeling like, you know, it was all her fault and all. So I just, I think we gave each other an out to accept things as they are and just take it from there.
Thank you. Good for you. Ani, how are you tonight?
I'm good, thank you. Glad to be here. I also, this is my most important and best that just keeping, trying to work on keeping things present and seeing things as they arise, trying to stay present, trying to stay focused. Yes.
Glad you're here. Lorna, how are you tonight? Good to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you. Thank you for your talk. I listened to on your website when you sent the link. You know, there's always another talk above it. And the one above this that you sent was a very good talk. I actually listened to it twice. It was very, very good.
What was it?
What?
Was it?
It was this talk.
Oh, this one.
Yeah. Okay.
It was on the same subject.
It was on the same subject, yeah. And anyway. And I have been thinking about Anatara and the saying that you say, you know, that when you think of yourself, that's not yourself, that's Anatara.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to wrap your head around it, but I think I am. I think I'm just beginning, the door is beginning to open, that what Anatara is and that my reactions, which we've just gone through tonight, you know, through your look, through your five clinging aggregates, and your perceptions of this and that, that's what reacts.
Yep.
And that is Anatara, and that is how I think I have in my past thought about myself in those terms. I can now just begin to see that that is Anatara. That is not myself. That is Anatara. And that door is just beginning to open. And another door that's beginning to open is that word I can hardly say, phenomena. You know, just recently I've been on about arisings and rising.
The arising and passing away, yep.
Yeah. And on Saturday, I don't know if you remember on the talk, I was like, enough arising, I can't do any more arising. You know, I said we've got to 4 o'clock one day, and I was tired of all these risings. It's beginning to sink in that I'm just reacting to Anatara. I'm just going, that's what's happening. There'll always be Anatara. From this minute to that minute to that minute, there's always something coming up in life. There always is. And I'm just beginning to realise I'm arising to Anatara. That's what the arising is. And
yep.
Through that, I can see the value of withdrawing from Anatara, from society. You know, when you meditate, you take yourself away, you're sitting quiet and nothing like that.
Yep.
And you're withdrawing from the arisings of the phenomena.
Yeah.
I can see the skillfulness in that withdrawing, because I can see the
phenomena
outside yourself. And I know on that talk that I mentioned, Maura was here, and she often refers to the inner self and the outer. She often, and she does this with the hands, you know, there's the inner self and the outer self, and it means something to her. I've never really got what she's, you know, there's the inner self and the outer self, and that's what she's meaning. You know, just, there's the inner self, and you don't have to react to the outer phenomena, the outer self, the outer. So that's sort of one thing. And then a funny thing happened, and that sort of occurred to me off the cushion, then it's on the cushion. I don't know, maybe why, I can't remember. I was meditating. My dogs always come in the room with me. I have two dogs. They always come in the room with me. They lie down on the floor. They're all around. But David, particularly the bigger one, he's on the floor. Something else is touching me. Anyway, I was somewhere in my meditation. I was meditating. And then Damon, the big dog, I didn't hear a noise. I don't know what startled him. But he was startled. And some part of his body hit my chair. And you know when you hit the chair, you don't know if it's this side or that side. I didn't know where he was. And obviously, you feel the vibration through your chair. And there was a bit of a bump. I think it was his head that hit the chair or something. And so I sort of popped out of my meditation. And he was laid on my left, but my eyes went to the right for some reason. And I thought he might be there. And he wasn't. So I looked at my left, and I saw, by this time, I'd looked here and looked there, he was already laying his head down to relax. There was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. But what I realized is that I came out of my meditation, I physically checked the surroundings, I took deep, took enough detail of my surroundings to understand my surroundings, and everything was all right. So I went back to my meditation, and I did go back to my meditation. There was no story. Mm-hmm. I didn't, in my mind, think, "Darn it, Damon, I wish you wouldn't do that." Mm-hmm. You know, I like to meditate. I don't like being disturbed. Like, there's always a story after something happened.
Yeah. And nothing arose.
I'm sorry?
Nothing arose.
Mm. And there was no story. There was no judgment. Okay? And so I went back, and I did go back to my meditation without a story. And I took one, two, three. I think I took about four breaths. And then I realized what had just happened. And then I got really excited.
And you want to?
So that was the rest of my meditation going.
Of course.
I had used my brain in the correct way. In a way, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
I just understood what was happening. No judgment, no story. And went back to meditation without anything.
Good for you. So yeah, I mean that you had an experience of an event in your life without any self-referential view.
I did.
What occurred.
I did, yes. Yeah. And that's the first time I've actually really felt it or observed it.
And that's the important part. We've all had those all the time. But we don't recognize it. And the important thing is to have the concentration and the right framework to recognize that it's a significant event. Most people would say your dog banging his head is not all that significant. It isn't. But your view of what occurred is what's significant.
Yeah.
The anatta, five clinging aggregates, karma, they're all basically the same thing. They all describe an ongoing process of life unfolding rooted in ignorance. The Buddha used the term anatta to simply describe that the views that anyone is holding of themselves, if they're ignorant of Four Noble Truths, do not accurately describe a self. They're not a self, anatta. The original word, atta or atman, in the original Pali, the Buddha spoke a dialect that was very similar to Pali, but the initial translations were in Pali. Atman referred to a higher soul of a being, and something that was ongoing. This was rooted in the Vedas, the precursor to modern Hinduism, and it was a common belief at the time. So the Buddha used a term that was commonly understood, and when he put the A-N in front of Atman or Atta, he was saying, no, there's no such thing as a permanent self, anatta. And he used that to describe the wrong views that would create a permanent self. So, and that word has been wildly misapplied over the years to say that there's no such thing as a self, that there's nothingness, that there's emptiness. The Buddha simply described that views, common views of self, do not accurately describe the self. Let go of the views. Go from wrong view to right view, hence the Eightfold Path. And that's where the teaching of ignorance and the arising and passing away of all things is so important. So that we can initially accept, okay, I don't see things clearly. How do I develop it? Through developing the Eightfold Path. I first have to develop some concentration so that I can hold in mind the right framework for seeing things clearly. And that leads to a teaching like this, like today. In one paragraph, the Buddha describes the whole thing. Recognize the arising and the passing away of, initially, your wrong views. Why hold on to them? It's a great description that you gave us tonight. And over the last few weeks, you've been talking about noticing the arising and the passing away of all things. Most of us will notice the arising, because that's where we can establish ourselves. Like the arising of anything. Anything that's giving us pleasure, we'll notice the arising. But we'll ignore the passing away, because it feels like loss, doesn't it? We don't want to be a part of that aspect of our life, the arising and passing away. In a broad sense, the arising is birth and the passing away is death. In between that, whether we have, you know, a real short life of maybe a year or a long life of 100 years, in between that is an infinite number of arisings and passing away. This is the true teaching of birth and rebirth, isn't it? What are we going to give birth to in this moment? Is it going to be a moment that's rooted in wisdom, framed by the Eightfold Path, or another moment that is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths? That's really the choice that we have in each moment. And that's why we develop concentration to support mindfulness of what we're contributing to our own life. Thank you, Lorna. Go on, good to see you tonight. How was your meditation?
Very peaceful.
Ah, good. I'm glad you joined us tonight. It's always a pleasure. Frank, how are you tonight?
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept that you just shared, from birth to death. We just experienced a death in our family. We found my brother dead in his house on Friday afternoon, a 56-year-old man. I lived my whole life with him and worked with him, and he was my partner. So, very insanely to me is that I really don't feel much of anything other than peace. Not really paired or married with joy, but just peace. Mm-hmm. Peace that I know that he's not suffering anymore. Under coming here for a year and a half and understanding the process of suffering and the need for this practice in everyone's life, to reduce that amount of stress and anxiety, and constantly chasing after something to relieve himself of the suffering that they feel and caught in a vicious cycle, is pretty much sums up his life. And I want to feel sorry for him, that I feel that he's died without really living. And I also feel sorrow for his four daughters that he left behind. But I don't feel any sorrow for him because he's has eternal peace. It's over for him. And my mind, off, my best meditation is every morning at 5 a.m., you know, and it varies, but it's a pretty steady 30 to 40 minutes, and then 20 minutes of reading or just contemplation on different topics or whatever. And I always get off the cushion feeling really peaceful, and I can go about my day, and I wouldn't miss that for the world. It kind of sustains my emotional stability. Mm-hmm. And it's just odd to me that I don't feel anything right now. During the day when I'm at work or when I'm bustling around, my mind wants to dwell on memories of the past. And it takes me out of the present, and my mind doesn't like being there. Not that I'm trying to avoid the memory, mm-hmm. but I try to, it like rechecks automatically back to the present. And so what's been happening the last couple of days is when I'm sitting in the morning, and definitely in my afternoon sit, the memories are kind of flashing through, and they're so quick. They're just like a memory of us fishing on the beach when we were kids, or on the boat, you know, as we got older, or on the commercial fishing boat, or, you know, weddings that we've been, just the memories keep flashing. So it's like the arising and passing away are so quick because it arises, and then it disappears, and then the next one arises, and then I have to remember and acknowledge and refocus on my breath more often. And I understand that it was a shock, you know, and I'm okay with it, you know. I don't need to change it. It's just what it is. And, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's all I got.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for sharing that with us. This kind of goes back to what I was saying, that some people say you let go of all this clinging, you become an automaton. No. You're feeling what is entirely appropriate to feel. But you're not getting lost in it either. You're not overreacting. What's occurred is what has occurred. It's an awful thing, what happened. But you feel what's appropriate to feel. And that's true of... That's true of mindfulness. True mindfulness is you feel and you experience what's appropriate for the moment and the event, without the need for it to be any different than it is. That's being fully immersed in life. That some people, when they first come to the Buddhist teaching and they hear his description, or he starts with dukkha, starts with suffering, saying, oh, this is pessimistic, or it's nihilistic, or it's too simplistic, until we realize it is our preoccupation with suffering and disappointment that causes us to create all these scenarios about who we are and what we are in life. It causes us to create this thing called anatta, stuck in wrong views. When we let go of all those wrong views and can live in the present, there's great peace in that, no matter what's occurring, even if it's a tragic event. We can be at peace with less than peaceful mind states. Give it a point. So, thank you, Frank. Any questions or comments on this tonight's topic? Or, well, I guess what I would say is that the best insight we can gain into the five clinging aggregates, into this ongoing personal vehicle of suffering, is to notice the arising and the passing away of all things. And remember, that's what Kandana said when he awakened in Buddha's very first teaching. All conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation, including, and most importantly, conditioned views of the world. If there's no other questions, we'll finish with metta, with the Karaniya Metta Sutra. So find your relaxed meditative posture, and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your bodies. And let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk tonight. And metta means goodwill or loving kindness, and metta is an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path, and an ongoing expression of an awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.